It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
And at the moment, there is no clue we're being given from officials as to a motive or an identity of the shooter. What we do know is that at 11:20 last night, the first 911 calls came in, and within 3 minutes, a sheriff, sergeant, and members of the California Highway Patrol were on scene. They heard shots. They knew that there was an active shooter at that point. That is when Sheriff Sergeant Ron Helis decided to enter the building. He was shot multiple times the second he opened that front door. And as you were saying, he died from his wounds a little while later in the hospital. As further law enforcement persons arrived, including a SWAT team, and made entry into the Borderline Bar and Grill, they found a horrific scene. 11 victims killed, most of them young people. And we have been talking all morning to those who survived, having been inside that bar and restaurant, and they describe scenes of absolute terror and absolute panic. Listen here to one of those witnesses.
We were at the bar, you know, having fun, dancing, and then all of a sudden you hear like the bang bang of the gunshots. Then our friends got the bar stools and they started slamming it against the window so we could get out.
Now, I spoke to another witness who told me that he was in the entranceway when the shooter first came in, and he says the first shot fired was at the security guard. We're told by sheriff's deputies that security guards at this bar, the Borderline Bar and Grill, would not historically have been armed. This witness told me that the shooter also threw what he thought to be smoke grenades. Now, we do not have that confirmed, but the bottom line, 11 innocent victims killed, a sheriff sergeant killed, and the shooter killing himself.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. That was Jonathan Hunt early this morning on Fox. Now there are 12 declared dead and lots of other people shot. It happened last night while most of us were sleeping, Thousand Oaks, California. The interesting thing, one of the many interesting things about this, it was at a country western bar, and it was near a lot of Christian schools like California Lutheran University, Pepperdine. California State, of course, is not Christian, but those two, Lutheran University and Christian and Pepperdine, are close by. The shooter is described as someone wearing a black, I think trench coat is how they described it, a black coat with a beard. And so, you know, who knows? Who knows? The wickedness that has just been unleashed on just private citizens, just the killing for killing's sake, is just unfathomable. And of course, the left will blame this on Donald Trump. It'll be his fault because of his rhetoric, of course. Not understanding that there are such deep things at play here. And first of all, law and order has to be drawn. The lines have to be drawn brightly, and people have to take a strong stand. Law enforcement, the president. And so a lot of times evil is pushed back just by strength being shown. And that's why many of us feel that the president's done a very good job on drawing some really bright lines. Yesterday, of course, speaking of, and so I need to finish that by saying, I know that we'll be hearing more during the day about this shooting. We inevitably do. And our hearts go out to the people in California, all the people who sent their kids to those schools who are worried sick. We don't know who the victims are yet, but we'll find out. I'm sure there are a lot of young people in that bar. And so it's just heartbreaking. Okay, so to move to the next thing, of course, yesterday, I think many people saw this coming but didn't expect it quite so quickly. I'll let John Scott tell you the story.
Moments after the news first broke on Fox, President Trump confirmed that Attorney General Jeff Sessions was out and that Matthew Whitaker, chief of staff to Attorney General Jeff Sessions, will become our new acting attorney general. The president went on to thank Attorney General Jeff Sessions for his service and wish him well, adding, a permanent replacement will be nominated at a later date.
Of course, that's John Roberts, and he's telling the story. The president said, he tweeted, we are pleased to announce that Matthew Whitaker, chief of staff to Attorney General Jeff Sessions at the Department of Justice, will become our new acting attorney general. He will serve our country well. And the president said, we thank Attorney General Jeff Sessions for his service and wish him well. A permanent replacement will be nominated at a later date. I think the president feels now with the increase in the number of Republican senators in the Senate, he'll be able to get someone through. Jeff Sessions wrote a beautiful resignation letter, which I wanted to read part of it to you here. He says, at your request, I'm submitting my resignation. Since the day I was honored to be sworn in as Attorney General of the United States, I came to work at the Department of Justice every day, determined to do my duty and serve my country. I've done so to the best of my ability, working to support the fundamental legal processes that are the foundation of justice. The team we assembled embraced your directive to be a law and order Department of Justice. We prosecuted the largest number of violent offenders and firearm defendants in our country's history. We took on transnational gangs that are bringing violence and death across our borders and protected national security. We did our part to restore immigration enforcement. We targeted the opioid epidemic by prosecuting doctors, pharmacists, and anyone else who contributes to this crisis and new law enforcement tools and determination. And we have seen results. And he goes on to say, I'm grateful for the fabulous men and women of law enforcement all over this country. Most importantly, in my time as Attorney General, we have restored and upheld the rule of law, a glorious tradition that each of us has a responsibility to safeguard. I've been honored to serve as Attorney General and have worked to implement the law enforcement agenda based on the rule of law that formed a central part of your campaign for the presidency. I want to read to you, if I could, just a blurb from Christian Adams, of course, who was working at the Justice Department under Eric Holder and is an enormous supporter of Jeff Sessions. He says, during his tenure, he reversed a dangerous trend of selectivity and often politically enforcing federal voter protections. He returned enforcement to equal aspects of the Voting Rights and National Voter Registration Acts for the benefit of all. He led the DOJ to course correct multiple litigation positions ranging from voter ID, redistricting, voter list maintenance, and more, all to eventual success before the Supreme Court and appellate circuits. General Sessions has done more in 2 years than most can accomplish in four or more. I wish him only the best moving forward. And Numbers USA issued this on behalf of the 8 million members of our online network, Numbers USA. Grateful for Attorney General Sessions' years of service to our nation. He has never wavered from his dedication to the rule of law, and he has done more to enforce our immigration laws than any other attorney general. His commitment to moving us toward an immigration policy that truly serves our national interest and protects American jobs and wages is inspirational. I do want to, most of you know that I know him, the attorney general, well, so obviously I'm very sad about this, not blind to the difficulties or the deficiencies. But it is a sad day, and I just think sometimes people just don't realize how much General Sessions has done in support of policies that we would embrace. He is a strong, moral man who embraces the Judeo-Christian ethic. And, of course, his downfall was that he recused himself, and we're really sorry he did that. I want to read to you an observation by a guy who calls himself, he's a writer, he calls himself the Ace of Spades. But actually, I think that he has this right. He says, the Democrats looked for Jeff Sessions' pressure point, his sense of himself as a gentleman of honor and amity, and they used it against him and squeezed it until he was empty of everything except compliance. He didn't know what time it is. He still believed in the old rules. He didn't notice his opponents had discarded those years in favor of sheer will to power. I think that's an accurate diagnosis of what has happened here. So Jeff Sessions has stepped aside. His chief of staff is stepping in. Interestingly enough, Well, you know what? I should let Catherine Herridge tell you about his new chief of staff, the new acting attorney general. Here it is.
Based on our reporting, I had heard from contacts that if in the midterms the president, the Republican Party, was able to expand its majority in the Senate, that the president would move very quickly to push out Jeff Sessions, which is in fact what we saw today.
What does this mean for Special Counsel Robert Mueller?
Well, we have not heard from the acting Attorney General Whitaker directly today on the special counsel, but there's a lot of attention tonight on an op-ed that he wrote last summer, which basically said that if Robert Mueller investigates the finances, that would be a red line crossed. And it reads in part, it does not take a lawyer or even a former federal prosecutor like myself to conclude that investigating Donald Trump's finances or his family's finances falls completely outside of the realm of his 2016 campaign. And allegations that the campaign coordinated with the Russian government or anyone else, that goes beyond the scope of the appointment of the special counsel. That seems a little prescient now, given the call from Democrats to look at the finances specifically.
Yeah, and the DOJ
okay, I'm
going to
interrupt because I just want to say quickly, Whitaker has been on record as really being a big critic of Robert Mueller. And Whitaker does not have any history with James Comey or Robert Mueller or Rod Rosenstein. Sorry. He doesn't have any connection to them, which is unusual. And so that's a good thing. Now, he'll be the acting attorney general, and he will be over the Mueller investigation. So the left is going apoplectic over that. We will revisit that later. But there are other things I want to tell you. The incoming leadership in the House has great plans. They plan to go all in on Russia. They plan to impeach Kavanaugh, and they want to charge him with perjury. And, of course, they want to go after the president as well. And so whoever, the Republicans coming into the House are going to have their hands full. There was a great article written by George Rasley of Conservative HQ where he had diagnoses kind of what happened in this this particular election. I think he's spot on. He says, of course, that to remind you that the Republicans expanded their margin, at least at this point, in the Senate, 54 to 46 seats. There's still Arizona pending. And the majority in the House, 225 to 210, which is not really, it doesn't sound like much, does it? The Democrats picked up 27 seats, but those were not necessarily based on anti-Trumpism, and the numbers are far less than the losses suffered by Bill Clinton in 1994, when Democrats suffered a 54-seat swing and incumbent Democratic Speaker Tom Foley was defeated for re-election. Barack Obama suffered a 63-seat loss in his midterm, the highest loss of a party in the House midterm election since 1938. George goes on to say, Republican losses were not concentrated in the suburbs, as they keep saying. Seat-by-seat results can be attributed to several non-Trump factors that the establishment media won't talk about. And George lists them. One factor is that activist judges in Pennsylvania and Colorado mandated redrawing of congressional districts, which handed Democrats at least four seats. Ethics problems. Republicans were charged. There's an ethics committee, and the there are forces in the House that are quick to make ethics charges. Remember Devin Nunes? Well, so Republicans, some of them had been charged with them, and the Dems in running used those charges against the Republican candidates. Also was the incredible influence of far-left billionaires George Soros and Tom Steyer financially and an organizational, just providing personnel and all of that. House Republicans were especially conservatives, outspent by 2 to 1. Dave Brat, for instance, in Virginia, outspent 2 to 1. There's the longer list than that. Steve Stivers, who was in charge of the money and how it was spent, did not help vulnerable incumbents that were conservatives. They spent the money on their friends, like Barbara Comstock. They poured a ton of money into her race in Virginia, and she lost by, I think, 14 points, something like that. That's probably wrong. Somebody have to correct me on that. The candidate recruitment that was done by the NRCC was just pathetic. The Democrats took such great care to handpick people that could actually deceive. And the Republican Party didn't do anything like that. And, of course, they ran from the president's agenda. They kept bragging. They wanted their members to talk about the tax cuts. And so that all boils down to the leadership of Paul Ryan. And could I just say that he's going to be gone? Jim Jordan has officially tossed his hat in the ring to run for minority leader in the House. And I'm really excited about that. So there'll be more to say about that later. Sandy Rios in the morning.
The Ministry of Preborn meets abortion-minded women right where they are and reaches them with the love of Christ.
We showed her love, and we accept her right where she's at. if the baby's saved by what we do here and the mother's life is spared from the devastation of abortion, that definitely helps them in this life. But this is not all that there is. We want our clients to know about Jesus.
I got to see his heartbeat. It kind of just looked like a little butterfly in a bubble. The Lord gave me that baby, and he gave me that baby for a reason.
The Ministry of Preborn runs and leads Christian pregnancy centers all over the country, helping abortion-minded mothers to choose life for their unborn babies. To find out more about how you can help save a baby's life, go to preborn.com or dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 and say baby. All gifts are tax deductible.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. We've seen God open up so many doors for us to help serve and love those who get affected by a natural disaster.
As the trees and the wind started crashing down around us, my wife was, of course, very diligently praying, you know, Lord, please be with us.
Very simply, we do it because God commands us to love others.
I see these volunteers all as a gift from God.
And I'm just grateful they're here, you know, helping out. It's a blessing.
If you're interested in becoming a part of what God's doing through 8 Days of Hope, please go to 8daysofhope.com, click on Get Involved, submit your email address.
I've noticed that whenever there's a time in my life when things might be a little gloomy, the number one thing that I can do is to go serve somebody.
And I would encourage anyone else to, it's worth it. Come out and do it next time if you didn't make it to this one. And the Father will really bless you in it.
Thank you so much for your prayers and volunteering with 8 Days of Hope.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Paul Kizito. I'm a junior biology major here at Truett McConnell, and I came from Uganda. What I love about TMU is number one is the heart of, you know, of just the school and the love for God, for Christ. You can see it once you step on the campus. Like, you can see it's best, like, the foundation for TMU is Christianity.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
President Trump held a news conference on Wednesday, and it did not take long before Jim Acosta embarrassed himself and his network. He refused to sit down after he was instructed to do so by the president. At some point, a female press aide came over, tried to take the microphone away. You can watch the altercation on toddstarnes.com. Here's what the president had to say.
I have another question. Are you worried?
That's enough. That's enough.
Mr. President, I was going to ask one of the other folks.
That's enough.
Pardon me, ma'am. Mr. President.
That's enough.
Mr. President, I had one other question. I may ask.
I'll tell you what, CNN should be ashamed of itself having you working for them. You are a rude, terrible person. You shouldn't be working for CNN.
CNN is defending the behavior of Mr. Acosta. They condemned the president's attack, said it was disturbingly un-American. What's disturbingly un-American is a grown man putting his hands on a female White House staffer on national television. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
I was going to play that clip for you, but Todd said it all. I mean, that was an amazing clip. We'll put it on our Facebook page if you didn't see that. You know, a friend of mine said to me just this week, and she's really savvy, but she said she wished President Trump would tone down, you know, his rhetoric. And I said to her, look, as much as you pay attention, I still don't think you understand the wickedness he's dealing with. If you hear that full clip, is how Jim Acosta is right there in front of him, accosting him, shall we use that word? Verbally accosting, refusing to let go of the mic. This assistant in the press corps, young girl, tries to take the mic from him, and he wrestles it from her. He won't give it to her. And he just insists on holding onto the mic and rudely continuing when he's not invited to do that. It was just, it's an amazing display. And so I'm not sure how many people could keep their calm as well as President Trump did, but he did. And so we'll put that on our Facebook page because you really should see it. It's Operation Christmas Child time. So let's talk about that for a second. If you haven't gotten your shoebox to fill and send to children around the world in 100 countries, go to SamaritansPurse.org/OCC, SamaritansPurse.org/OCC. You can figure out how to get the box if your church is not handing them out. I bet they are. Most of them are. And there are drop-offs at five different collection sites. That drop-off will take place beginning November 12th through the 18th. So you still have time, and I hope you'll help us. Again, it's samaritanspurse.org/OCC. There's much to say, of course, about whether it's the president and Jim Acosta and all the election results. And I could do that, but this morning I'm going to go to some things that you've been saying back, your email on Facebook, and we're going to open the phone lines. Okay, so I'm going to share a little bit of Facebook email with you, and then we will open them. I'll go ahead and give the number. It's 888-589-8840. 888-589-8840. By the way, the death count in California is now 13. It's moved up one more. It's just amazing. This is from Andrea. She said, I'm in Dave Bratt's district. That's District 7 in Virginia. And in fact, I've worked with him on a nonprofit board for more than 6 years. I canvassed in my area that normally goes Republican. Some of the people I encountered door-to-door were almost hostile when they saw the Bratt campaign brochures. I finally asked a neighbor who said, no way, when I made my pitch. I asked why he was against Bratt, and he said, as long as Trump is in the White House, I will not be voting Republican. Spanberger, that's Abigail, had a lot of money. Her spots were constantly on the air, and she shaded her real agenda to appear more conservative. By the way, Abigail Spanberger was another Soros-funded candidate. I said that many times, but I don't know if the people in Virginia 7 knew that. In her ad, she was insistent that she would, quote, work with anyone to help Virginians, end quote, be they Trump or Democrats. She also said she would not support Pelosi. We'll see. You never heard anything about her pro-abortion stance, and the newspaper here did what it could to help her. Sad, sad, sad. I do have to say, I think that's one of the greatest losses of this midterms is the contribution of Congressman Dave Bratt. I mean, he has done so many things. He doesn't really blow his own whistle, but I can tell you he was involved in so many good things. One of the only economists serving in the House who really understood the economy. Most of them really don't understand the economy and all its complexities, and yet they're making all the decisions about how to spend tax dollars, what to fund, what not to fund, how to manage and operate the biggest business anywhere, and that's the United States government. Dave Bratt will be missed by the Freedom Caucus, and he'll be missed by any honest person who serves in the House of Representatives. He's done such a stellar job. And so we'll continue to pray that God will land him in just the right place and will honor his faithful service, not only to God, but also to the country. All right, this is on Facebook. This is from Jeff. He said, Sandy, I'm a pastor. I vote, and I would certainly encourage our congregation to vote, but I don't spend a lot of time on politics. In other words, telling others to get out and vote for so-and-so. I'm not in that business. I think it's important that Christians vote. God uses secondary means and vote for the right person. But my time is not consumed with the political world. As a pastor, I'm called to feed God's people with his word, and that's what I prepare to do. I'm not called to inform them of all the details regarding the political arena. I may or may not participate in a political event, a rally, a walk. It doesn't make me or anyone else under my care less a person if they do or do not participate in a walk or rally. I heard that you were upset this morning that pastors are not more involved, but at the same time, I think our callings are different. Obviously, much more could be said. I probably didn't communicate well. Thank you for your show. I listen almost every morning. Jeff, I'm glad you wrote because it gives me a chance to clarify. I want to be very clear that the last thing I want when I go to church to worship on Sunday morning is to hear about politics. I don't want to hear that. I don't think it's appropriate. I want pastors to preach God's word. I want to worship in an environment where we're not polarized. That's the last thing we need. Jeff, just to be clear, what I really want pastors to do, though, where I feel like they're failing, and I doubt that you are. If you listen to me every day, that tells me a lot about what you actually know and understand about what's going on in the world. My complaint is that I think too many pastors are completely distant from what their congregants are experiencing, whether it's the crisis in our schools, the transgender bathrooms. And before that, I remember, when my son was small, they started introducing witchcraft, and then they started introducing Heather has two mommies. And all of these things, it's only gotten worse, the transgender bathroom issue and the giving kids a name that comports with their gender. The kids are just dealing with such serious problems And I feel like most pastors have buried their head in the sand and are not really addressing what are moral issues, certainly under the purview of a pastor's preaching and teaching, that will prepare his people, their people, to know how to navigate in this world. And then also the political thing, that can be done, I would say, by providing voter guides or suggesting voter guides and reminding people that it is Christian to be civically responsible. Romans 13, I mean, Christian citizenship is something that should be addressed. So, Jeff, no, please, thank God you're not going into the pulpit and preaching politics. I'm glad. But I think that, and probably you're doing this, I think that a pastor should fold into his messages real life. We are living real lives in this real world, and the thing that we most need is how to apply our faith to the crises that we see. And so many of the crises in the political realm are moral crises. They have a moral implication, whether it's caring for the poor or whether it's, you know, how do we feel about immigration? What is the biblical teaching on immigration? That would be a hard one to tackle, but there are ways, there are things that could be said about that. So I go on and on, but I just wanted to clarify what I really believe should happen in pulpits and the responsibility of pastors. I've seen too many of them just not want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about abortion anymore because it makes women feel bad. And I have found that whole business of even, there's another tangent here, the sanctity of life has become like a buzzword that really means nothing. I'll give an example of what I'm talking about. A friend of ours, strong Catholic, and went to Catholic schools, Catholic neighbors, very pro-life, very, very, he and his wife. And a young friend of theirs, decided to run for Congress. She comes from the same background, Catholic, and the Catholic Church, of course, is very much centered in terms of political activity on the sanctity of human life and pro-life. But when it came time for this young girl who's well-known in the community to run for Congress, she declared she was pro-choice. But it didn't seem to matter to the neighbors who were all raised the same way and all allegedly believed the same thing. And I think the reason they were putting up her signs, didn't care about it, and that was very grieving to our friends. And I understand that, but I think the diagnosis is that it's become a buzzword, a thing to do, with that, devoid of meaning. And so I think pastors and priests need to explain what that means. Why is life sacred? Why is life, why is elder life sacred? Disabled life sacred? What is it about life that means so much to God? Plant in people's hearts and minds what God thinks about how life just should not be snuffed out. It was a commandment he gave long before the commandments were ever given. It was in Genesis, not to take innocent life. So this, you see what I'm saying? I just think the background in order to make these decisions so that people understand and not building a political campaign with a buzzword. That's not what churches should be doing. All right, I've spent lots of time on that. But this is from Erica. She says, she's talking about, I mentioned that in Florida, a measure was passed, an amendment to the Constitution, to make it legal for felons to have their, if they've spent time, they've done their time, they should have their voting rights restored. And in Florida, that's 1.5 million people. Now, that doesn't include murder. That's murder, and I'm not sure about the other one. Could be rape, but at least murderers cannot have their voting rights restored. I just think that's wrong, and it's offended Erica. Let me read this, what she has to say. It's not a bad thing for felons to vote if they're trusting God. My husband loves God with everything in him, and he paid his debt to society for a crime 20 years ago. Conservatives need to stop judging and check their own hearts for their life, for their faults. I'm shocked you feel the way you do about felons and voting. Illegal immigrants, okay, but this? I'm just surprised and saddened. Prison reform is a serious subject that no one wants to touch in the States. A few federal laws here and there, but too many politicians' pockets are lined for Do some deserve to stay behind bars? Yes, but so many do not. Please check your heart with God, our Father feels and thinks. Erica, I guess the best way to say this is when we, I'm going to make this a sort of spiritual comparison. This, you know, committing a crime in the United States is not the same thing as breaking God's law, but there is a correlation. When you break God's law, when you sin, there are always consequences. You know, and there's nothing God can't forgive, but there are consequences. Like, oh, you know, the most obvious is, you know, if you are a young girl, you're a Christian, and you get pregnant, God can forgive you if you have sex outside of marriage. Most of us know about that, right? But he doesn't stop the pregnancy. You have to have the baby. And if you have, you were drug addicted in your early life and you had children and you were a terrible mother, your children are still messed up, even if God forgives you. I'm just saying there are natural consequences for the things we do. And I think that when you commit a felony, that's a serious crime, you have a consequence, and that is that you lose your right to vote. You know, there's something corollary to that in the church, again, like deacons who've been married more than once in some churches cannot be deacons. Pastors who've been divorced cannot be pastors. There are consequences. It doesn't mean that God hasn't forgiven and restored, but there are natural consequences. You know, if you smoke too much, you get lung cancer. And maybe if you're out of control with an addiction, you might get obese. And there's nothing God can't forgive, but you still have to deal with what you have done. And so I actually think, and this may kind of shock you, and I hope you can understand what I'm trying to say here. I really believe a Christian, a felon who's become a Christian and serious about their fate, should not be the issue of, I deserve this right restored. It should be more nobility, and this is a consequence, and I'm willing to accept it, kind of as a way of showing your repentance, really. I think if you've truly repented, you don't demand a right or something to be restored. You can ask God. And so you think I don't know anything about this. I have to say, Erica, I actually have a close family member who's in prison right now and will be losing his voting rights, and it bothers him. But I said the same thing to him. So just so you know, it isn't impersonal to me. Tracy says, I truly believe the reason the Republican establishment doesn't care if we lose the House or Senate is because they have the same beliefs as the Democrats. You're spot on, Tracy. That's something we discovered a long time ago. They say one thing. In fact, did I find this headline? It reminds me of this headline. Somebody wrote a snarky headline. Here it is. Here it is. Okay. What's the outlet here? This is from Babylon Bee. Sorry. You know, that's a satirical website. And here's the headline. GOP. Man, we were going to defund Planned Parenthood, but now we lost the House. Oh, well, maybe next time. Yeah. So I think that says, I don't need to say anymore, but you're spot on, Tracy. Then Beverly writes to say, you talked about what teachers in school are facing in regard to illegal immigrants, but you didn't mention the diseases that they were bringing in, and children in the classroom will be subjected to the diseases that have been eradicated here. Also, diseases unknown to this country. Well, Beverly, I have talked about it, but maybe you weren't listening on that day because it went by quickly. She lists a bunch of them, and she talks about that new virus that's polio-like, that's paralyzing kids. Yes, and drug-resistant tuberculosis, mosquito-borne diseases, dengue and chikungunya, malaria, yellow fever, diphtheria, measles, lice, scabies, swine flu, AIDS, smallpox, cholera, typhus, chickenpox, and all kinds of infections. Yes, that's coming across the border. And that many of it started in 2014, and that was the first surge under Barack Obama. So it's a serious problem. No question about it. Patrick Strong says, Democrats gained control of the House. Democrats flipped 7 governors. Democrats won at least 6 state legislative chambers. Marijuana won in both blue and red states. 1.4 million felons had their voting rights restored in Florida. People of color, gays, more non-Christians are in political positions than ever before. Despite the Senate, it was a very good day for Democrats. Patrick is happy about that. But it's well said, Patrick. You said it well. But I have to tell you, you know, sometimes when we win, we actually lose. You have to think about that. I'll be right back. Sandy Rios, back to your phones. 888-589-8840. 888-589-8840.
The Lord hates hands that shed innocent blood. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Live Action released a report detailing how millions of dollars in taxpayer funding to Planned Parenthood are allowing it to spend millions to elect politicians who support in-utero baby murder. Taxpayer funding frees up donors to direct their money to Planned Parenthood's political agenda, rather than to fund what nominal health services they provide. Planned Parenthood's political arm spent $20 million on its own and another $30 million in joint efforts during the 2018 midterms. They also spent $160 million for public policy and movement building, as well as another $85 million in fundraising last year.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. On Tuesday, Republicans squandered a once-in-a-generation opportunity to enact a thoroughly conservative agenda. Although they had control of all of Congress and an energetic president, they got very little done that was distinctly conservative. As a consequence, voters gave control of the House to regressives. Any possibility of building a border wall is now gone for good. But voters increased the Republican majority in the Senate. This gives the opportunity for the president to confirm as many originalist judges as he can squeeze through the pipeline in the next 2 years. And he still has the veto pen. He has threatened repeatedly to use it to stop bad legislation, but hasn't done it yet. He'll get his chance in the next 2 years. It's time for the president to go pedal to the metal on judges and vetoes.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
Hey, I'm Brant. So there's this guy named Jordan. He's a healthy guy. He's a dad of six, and he works as a guide in Alaska. And he goes to the doctor, true story, he goes to the doctor, and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage 4. And here's the thing. He had switched earlier from medical insurance to MediShare, where Christians share each other's medical bills. So the question for Jordan and his wife, Jenny, was, is this actually going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. So if you want to find out more, here is a number for you. 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. There's much talk about bipartisanship in the wake of Tuesday's election. It usually amounts to short-lived lip service paid to a practice that is generally overrated and a formula for lowest common denominator agendas that are not in the public interest. One such bipartisan initiative is so-called criminal justice reform. Legislation advancing some of its many troublesome elements has been dubbed the First Step Act. More accurately described as the jailbreak bill, it may be taken up in the lame duck session as early as next week. Departing Attorney General Jeff Sessions and the law enforcement community oppose such steps that would put lots of hardened and unreformed criminals back on America's streets. President Trump has rightly criticized those who are weak on crime. He must resist the temptation to throw in with them and endanger public safety in the name of bipartisanship. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Thank you, Mr. President. I challenge you on one of the statements that you made in the tail end of the campaign. In the midterms, that
here we go.
That, well, if you don't mind, Mr. President, that this caravan was an invasion. As you know, Mr. President,
I consider it to be an invasion.
As you know, Mr. President, the caravan was not an invasion. It's a group of migrants moving up from Central America towards the border with the U.S.
Thank you for telling me that.
And why did you characterize it as such?
Because I consider it an invasion. You and I have a difference of opinion.
But do you think that you demonized immigrants
I want them to come into the country, but they have to come in legally. You know, they have to come in, Jim, through a process. I want it to be a process. And I want people to come in, and we need the people.
Your campaign.
You know why we need the people, don't you? Because we have hundreds of companies moving in. We need the people.
Right. But your campaign had an ad showing migrants climbing over walls and
so on.
Well,
that's true.
But they
weren't actors.
They're not going to be doing
that.
They
weren't actors. Well, no, it's true. Do you think they were actors? They weren't actors. They didn't come from Hollywood. Right. These were people. This was an actual, you know, it happened a few days ago. And
they're hundreds of miles away, though. They're hundreds and hundreds of miles away. That's not an invasion.
I think you should let me run the country. You run CNN.
All right.
And if you did it well, your ratings would be much better.
If I may ask one other question, are you worried?
That's enough. That's enough.
Mr. President, pardon me, ma'am. I had one other question, if I may ask, on the Russia investigation. Are you concerned that... That you may have.
I'm not concerned about anything with the Russian investigation because it's a hoax. That's enough. Put down the mic.
Mr. President, are you worried about indictments coming down in this investigation? Mr. President.
I'll tell you what, CNN should be ashamed of itself having you working for them. You are a rude, terrible person. You shouldn't be working for CNN. Go ahead.
I think that's unfair.
You're a very rude person. The way you treat Sarah Huckabee is horrible. And the way you treat other people are horrible. You shouldn't treat people that way. Go ahead.
All right, we're going to go on. He goes on. And if you see the video, that's Jim Acosta, CNN. One of the aides, Sarah Huckabee's people, tries to take the mic from Jim Acosta. She just reaches out, and then he will not give her. She takes hold of it and tries to get it from her, and he fights her. It's just amazing, honestly. And the president ends by saying later, it's fake news. And I agree with him. I think the American media has become propaganda, much like Pravda was in Russia so many years ago. I could say so much about that. But let me just say, this is from Costa. She says, he says, I'm a U.S. citizen from Rwanda. I wish you could know what media did to set fire that sparkled the Tutsis' genocide. For some of you, it was the Hutus and Tutsis, and there was a genocide. This is before many of you even were watching. This is in Africa, of course. These liberal mass media, that they are there to create emotions among Americans, and it is horrible. Most of Americans don't see that. I think you're right, Costa, and that's what we're trying to portray. All right, let me go to the phones. Let's go to Joe in Ohio. Good morning, Joe.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Just wanted to make a couple points. They should have kicked CNN out of the news press room a long time ago. All they do is come in there and they distract, and that's their mission, is to distract. I mean, that way we can't get the word out about the great economy, the great job creation, the record low unemployment. That's all CNN's doing, is trying to distract from all the good things that are happening. Second of all, I was happy we picked up some good Christian conservatives. Marsha Blackburn replacing Bob Corker. Marsha Blackburn, strong Christian conservative. Josh Hawley, strong Christian conservative, replacing Claire McCaskill, great upgrade. And, of course, Ted Cruz, strong Christian conservative, was able to fight off the $70 million in negative ads against him. Very disappointed about losing the House. I lay that blame at the feet of John Boehner and Paul Ryan. They had control of the House in 2010. They promised to defund Planned Parenthood. And, ironically, Todd Starnes and Brian Fisher on their commercial made a point. Planned Parenthood spent $450 million in political ads against the Rhino establishments. The Rhino establishments weren't smart enough to realize, hey, if we defund Planned Parenthood, not only are we going to stop abortion, Planned Parenthood's not going to have that taxpayer money to fund their candidates. We didn't defund Obamacare. We didn't stop immigration, and they continued to allow Obama to double the debt from $9 trillion to $19 trillion. So thanks for all you do. Just wanted to get those points out.
Yeah, Joe, those are all good points. And, of course, since you're from Ohio, you know all about, I'm sure, Congressman Jim Jordan, and you've heard me talk about this enough. I should say again that the leadership races now, because Republicans didn't take the majority, Jim Jordan cannot possibly be Speaker, but he can be minority leader. And so those elections, that's different. This is too much information, maybe. Let me just say quickly, it's going to require just half of the votes of that Republican caucus. Kevin McCarthy, of course, wants to be that. But Kevin McCarthy and Steve Scalise have done nothing more than Paul Ryan's bidding, and before that, John Boehner's. And so they would be terrible replacements. They would be the business as usual, as Joe just described it. Well, he doesn't even have to describe it. We've all seen it. Have we not, that they've done nothing? I think of the Kavanaugh hearing. At least the senators over that, Grassley and others, found some backbone. And I think that is really what saved the Senate. But did you hear Paul Ryan making any statements championing Kavanaugh or anyone or Kevin McCarthy? I mean, the only time they even started talking about a wall was when the invasion started on the southern border. And so they could have done it a long time ago, but they didn't. We all know that. And so that leadership needs to be gone. And that's why many of us are lobbying as hard as we can for Jim Jordan to be the minority leader, in, because they're going to have a battle on their hands, a battle like they can't even imagine. Life is going to be literally hell for those serving in the House that are conservatives for the next 2 years. And so it's going to require fighting and a fighter, and that's what Jim Jordan is. And so if you want to contact your incumbent, any of you, to support Jim Jordan for leader, that would be a really good thing. He's gone. Thanks very much. Was it Joe in Ohio? All right, let's go to Virginia. Kevin, good morning.
Good morning, Sandy. I'm calling from the late, great state of Virginia and the late, great district of the 7th District, and where we miss Dave Brad. I can't believe that we now have two communist senators and a communist representative in the 7th District. People are so gullible. You could throw money at an idiot, and then the people would vote for him. And that's what we've done in the 7th District. It's embarrassing. The only thing that you made a comment about Barack Obama and Bill Clinton losing more seats, the only difference is back then people were semi-normal. Right now we have a group of people that are literally insane running the Democrat Party. And these people are venomous. All they seek is the destruction of the country and power. And so I think that even the loss of less people than Clinton and Obama, we've got people that are just more radically nuts. I think we're in for some real trouble. And I think that the people, when the people see the bloom of this little bud that is coming from the 7th District, they're going to rue the day when they voted for this woman. She's a complete George Soros-backed Nancy Pelosi and those other nuts acolyte, and she's going to be horrible for this district.
You know, Kevin, the thing that distresses me the most, I'll put it this way. When Bill Clinton was elected, I was really distressed because I knew a ton about his record in Arkansas. I had people reaching out to me. I interviewed the state troopers. I knew, you know, his lack of character, and I couldn't believe he was elected. Well, that was bad enough, but then 4 years later, he was reelected. When people knew about Monica Lewinsky, they knew more about his personal history, he was reelected. And so the same thing here. We know that there have always been, I'll say wicked, there's wicked people now. They're just wicked. It's not even a matter of personal immorality. It's wickedness. We can see that, but why can't most people see that? Why do they then think that Donald Trump is so wicked and horrible and he must be destroyed, not just defeated, he must be destroyed? Some people that we consider normal, that's the position they take, and they would rather have these crazy people in power than they would anybody that supports Donald Trump, because they think he's the crazy. That's the part that is most disturbing to me. And I'm sure you're living right in the middle of it.
Sandy, I think what it is, it's just like in the Bible where God turns them over to their wicked ways. I believe he's just blinded them, and they just are maniacal about what they've got to do. It's almost like, turning Christ over to the Pharisees. They just have to do it. It's like a copperhead. It has to bite. That's what it's here for, that's what it does, and that's what it's going to do. And that's exactly what these people are like. Every time you ask us to write our congressmen or senators, I could only write Dave Brat, because writing the people we've got as our senators is just a complete joke. These people are full-on communists, full-on communists, and make no bones about it.
All right, Kevin, thank you. That's a kind of a bleak report from Virginia, but, you know, it's so close to D.C. that they've applied a ton of resources to taking away that once very red state with a strong Christian population. And of course, that's enough said about that for the moment. Let's go to John in Indiana. Good morning, John.
Yes, ma'am. John from Indiana.
Yes. Hi. How are you?
Yeah. All right. Good. Good. Sister Sandy, good to talk with you. Just want to make a quick point here about what you commented about young Patrick that emails you. It's, you know, probably being from a millennial generation and all that he is. I'm a three-time service vet and an African-American. And the monolithic lumping that people tend to do with blacks and, you know, so-called gays, which I refer as homosexual as the Bible does, that narrative right there is so demeaning and demoralizing for black Americans. And, you know, as you said, you well said, that when you win, you actually are going to lose. Lord Acton said it very well that, you know, absolute power will corrupt absolutely. And notice what the Democrats have recently retorted regarding wanting that absolute power. So the Holy Spirit's with you, ma'am. Continue to say what you're saying. You're spot on with the Word of God. And you stand tall before God and, not bow before men. And praise the Lord for you.
Yeah. Thanks, John. That was so sweet. I wish I had more time to talk to you this morning, but just God bless you. That was very kind. Thank you. Well, we're all in this together, and it just has nothing to do with color. Nothing. Nothing. Let me go to Kathy in Ohio. Good morning, Kathy. Good morning.
Hello?
Kathy. Yes, ma'am. You're on.
And I'm celebrating a win for our president. When Jim Acosta, and I didn't mispronounce his name, that's an adjective, when Jim Acosta attacked him, that was a setup, I believe, that he was baited, as he always is. But he's not the insane man that everybody claims he is. He handled that situation with flying colors, and it shows who he is and the ability of his leadership. Anybody else would have fallen for that, but he didn't. And I believe that we should celebrate that. It just goes to show. Bring it on, Lap, because you don't know what you're up against. That's all I have to say.
Okay, Kathy. No, actually, I thought the same thing. I thought he handled it beautifully. I got an email from Charles. He said something about, he listened to Josh. Josh, I hope you're listening. These are people's responses to your email. He was thanking me for some of the things I said to Josh. And he said, when I heard him bragging about how the Dems win in the House made my blood boil, he said, thank you for letting God use you, and thank you for your measured response, Christ-filled response. God bless and pray for us young folks who struggle with unrighteous anger. And that's the part I really wanted to get to. So, Charles, you know, it's normal to be angry in these situations. It would have been normal for Donald Trump to lose his temper yesterday. But I have to say that I think a lot of the things that people say are not personal. That's one of the reasons. They may think it's personal, but I don't take it personally. Because this is a battle, a spiritual battle, against forces that they don't even know they're cooperating with, and ones that you and I can't see either, but we know that they're there. This is a spiritual battle. That's why I don't take it personally. I believe that people like Josh and others that you're dealing with don't know what they don't know. And so I continue to try to teach as best I can every day. I remember being in the Soviet Union after 60 years of lies and lies, and I saw the light bulb go on in so many eyes, including a neurologist who was named Clara Labadinskaya. I will never forget when the light came on in her eyes and she said, but we are beginning to think that maybe there is a God. I'll never forget that moment. And that's what I pray will happen in this country when the lights go on and people actually see what's true. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.